What is going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I am John Ramdean. He's my good friend Robin Black.
There's a lot of stuff happening in the UFC, actually mixed martial arts in general. We look over the next couple of months. I think the bullseye, the target, is UFC 200, which goes down in July in Las Vegas. It was supposed to be Conor and Nathan Diaz. We get the rematch between Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier. Outstanding matchup. Misha Tate on the card. What else? Another title fight on that card, right?
Yeah.
Three title fights.
I can't even remember. Jacek is that weekend. Is she on that one?
Eddie Alvarez
is that weekend.
RDA is also that weekend. So there's just so much stuff going on.
And 199 is Weidman. And
198 to the heavyweight championship.
What does that leave?
Exactly.
45?
Yeah, 45. All right, 45. That's right.
Interim 45.
Which will probably end up being the undisputed 45.
Also
right?
On 199, 35.
Yeah, 35. Yeah. Dominic and Uriah Faber.
What does that even leave? Where's Robbie Lawler?
Where is Robbie Lawler? Is that what they've been working on? UFC was been. They were hoping they could get Nathan Diaz to fight Robbie Lawler.
Yeah. And if not, it's like Carlos Condit. Did you want that rematch? If not, then who does that leave? You know.
Woodley?
Woodley probably.
Yeah, I guess there's a bunch of
That's
options.
Probably they're, the last thing.
Well, I would imagine one of the things they were doing. Conor out. Can we get GSP? Can we get him? Not happening, folks.
It's not ready.
However, coming up this Sunday, live from Rotterdam, Holland, Netherlands, whatever you want to call it, a spectacular fight night card. In the main event, former Strikeforce and K1 World Grand Prix champion Alistair Overeem takes on the former UFC heavyweight champion, the man that holds a victory over the current champion Fabrizio Verdum, the Pitbull Andre Arlovsky, an outstanding matchup. You talked to Alistair Overeem ahead of the fight.
Yeah, and sitting right here. And he was interesting. I wanted to get some stuff about his assessment of Arlovsky. He was a little close to the vest, but smart. Like, he was like, yeah, I got some plans. Yeah, I've got some surprises for him. But if I told you, those would not be considered surprises.
I was there when Chad Mendes said the same thing to you.
True. Chad Mendes, look, sometimes when I pick this up, it's because Chase, our producer, will send us a message. This time it was not that. But yes, Chad Mendes had just weighed in, and I'm like, well, you know, you got some different ideas.
Ahead of his fight with Frankie Edgar.
You got some different ideas from Frankie? Yeah. I'm not telling you. But he had just weighed in and stuff, and he did look a little bit like peeved that I even asked. Over him, not so much. It was just kind of like, I'm not gonna give that away. So I followed it up with, well, when you laid out Junior, was that slip hook, it felt rehearsed to me because it was trying to draw out. So I'm Overeem and you're Junior, and I'm trying to draw this right hand so I can slip out here and come up over top of the hook.
Especially with Overeem's long arms.
Yeah, and that happened. But if you look back at the moment, this never comes, never really comes. Junior kind of shows it.
He was anticipating
it. So he was ready to inside slip just the straight right hand and come up with the left hook. So it looked rehearsed. I asked him. He said, I had that plan for Junior.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I don't doubt it. I mean, he's very complicated, very, very intelligent, kickboxer.
When you look at it, Alistair Overeem, in MMA alone, almost he's this fight with Andre Arlovsky on paper. Again, I say on paper because who knows how many – undocumented fights there are, but 55 professional mixed martial arts fights he's had already in his career. Yeah. You add to that a lifetime of kickboxing. Yeah. Just like Mark Hunt is a master.
Of types of kickboxing, probably. Some undocumented.
Exactly.
Some three in a night.
That's it. So just like Mark Hunt is a master of range because of that, Alistair Overeem is as well. But sometimes I referenced Robbie Lawler because we had Robbie Lawler here in studio, and he said, even when you know you should be doing the right things, you've trained to do this, your body tricks you, and you do things that are out of character. And sometimes that's what happens, and that's why Alistair Overeem has been knocked out. He's been stopped in mixed martial arts, where a lot of people say they have no business knocking you out. You're a kickboxing champion. Again, It's the fight game. Anything
many
can happen.
Variables. And talking about out of character, I'm sure we always jump all around, but I'm working on Weidman versus Rockhold breakdown. That spinning kick is absolutely out of character. It's wrong. The shoulder is there. He's not in a position to be spinning kicked. What he was in a position to do was move away from anything this way.
Right.
So you want to hit him that way. You're doing it because you feel like you need to stop him as he's sort of half moving that way, but it's not there. It was wrong. It was a mistake. He was compromised somehow. His thought process was compromised. And that was the middleweight champion of the world, never been beaten in mixed martial arts, never even really had a rough round as far as mm-hmm. I remember. Damian Maia, and he had sort of a quick sandy kind of vibe, but I don't remember him having a terrible round ever.
Now, when Luke Rockhold, when you say that, Luke Rockhold pointed out the fact that we looked at Chris Weidman, undefeated. It's going to be very difficult to defeat this guy for any of the top challengers. You beat Anderson Silva. You beat Lyoto Machida. You beat Vitor Belfort. A lot of people, Luke Rockhold being one of them, saying they were all past their prime.
Yeah.
That Anderson Silva was a broken guy, and we saw that he just could not recapture what he had, you know, had in his heyday. Vitor Belfort, once off the juice, Vitor couldn't compete in today's landscape. And for Lyoto Machida, well, we've seen that he's taken, so that he was pinched recently, so who knows?
Yeah.
But on top of that, people have figured out his game, mm-hmm. and he was in his mid to late 30s, so...
So if you're going to face Conor McGregor, you're like, you got lucky with Aldo. Mendez was off the couch, no training camp,
yeah.
Mendez.
Yeah.
The other guys were midgets, etc.
Yeah.
You want to demystify any
yeah.
of that stuff. So from your perspective, this is not
this
real.
This is not real.
And what if you can make him
believe
that?
It?
And I think Rockhold's game was, one, not buying any of these. You beat, and I don't know why everyone's got to pick on the Brazilian, especially when you see 198 coming up. How many?
Oh, we love
brilliant,
it. Yeah.
That's as great a
yeah.
card as you're ever going to
yeah,
see.
I agree.
And it's all broken down Brazilians. Okay, first of all, Brazilians are among the best fighters
yeah.
in the world over
yeah.
the last 20 years.
I love them. We love you,
yeah,
Brazil.
Yeah, it's true. And thanks for jiu-jitsu, by the
yeah.
way. It's killer.
Valley Tudo.
It's killer.
Thanks for
yes. So he said, yeah, you bunch of broken down old guys. One, Rockhold doesn't want to go – what you do not want to do. He actually took a page out of Weidman's book because remember Weidman was like, I will not lose to Anderson Silva
yeah.
before I go in there. Rockhold was like, I'm not going in there thinking, oh, my God, Chris Weidman's a killer. He's going in there going, Chris Weidman's overrated. That's a good belief for him to have. Turns out to be wrong. Well,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
well, I was going to lose, you know.
yeah.
If I was wrong, I was wrong. But don't go in there thinking, you know, this guy is too good for me. You go in there thinking he's beatable, but he's very tough to deal with. But even better, if I can get Weidman to doubt it for a moment, if I can get him to go, well, geez, Anderson was broken down. You know, Lyoto, I took 25 minutes to beat him. Luke beat him up in seven. And then, you know, Vitor was off the juice. Like, if you can get him to buy into any of that for a moment, that could help.
It seems difficult, though. Chris Weidman's so mentally strong. He believes that it was a blessing in disguise, losing to Luke Rockhold. We've seen many champions... They fall off the mountain and they come back stronger than ever. George St. Pierre lost to Matt Serra. He lost to Matt Hughes. He came back, redeemed himself, avenging those two losses, and would go on a ridiculous run. There's tons of examples in history. Demetrius Johnson losing Dominic Cruz and Brad Pickett. Ever
yep.
since losing to those, well, losing to Dominic Cruz's last yep. fight, went on this ridiculous mm-hmm. run. I expect that's what we're going to see with Chris Weidman because he said, you know, if it wasn't broke, why need to fix it? I was doing all the things that I needed to do. Now I can go and test things, go and mm-hmm. work with other people.
Yeah, it's a very interesting – that is a very interesting thing that he's observed. So let's take that concept and move it to anything else. So business. The thinking in business now – and let's go with television or media. The thinking now is the automatic thing that happens is that – things shrink. TV shrinks. The amount of people who watch your website shrink. It's shrinking because there's so many things
yeah.
everywhere. So natural is shrinkage. So if you're staying the same or growing, what you're doing is so working that our number one priority is don't screw it up. Because naturally,
yeah, right.
if you screw it up in any way, you'll go back to failing again. So correctly maintaining success is something that that's what the thinking of business is. Do not mess this up. We're winning, and not many people are winning. You know, if Fight Network, if you watch Fight Network and you told a few other people and a few other people watch it, that's a rare thing.
Yeah.
Everybody else is shrinking. If you're growing, your number one choice is, let's not screw this up. Once you screw it up, okay, well, now we got to.
It's done.
Now we might as well try some new things because, look, we had it down. And you could screw it up by some errors of yours. So if we change a bunch of things at Fight Network, we'll screw it up. Or the world just changes around you. And that's what happened, I think, with Weidman and Rockhold. The world changed around him. The level of other fighters came up. So where Weidman was, which was winning, became normal. Once it's normal, you must change. So you're no longer defending your success. You're like, I'm no longer succeeding. Time to change. And that's what happened.
And I think that's kind of what happened with Andrei Arlovsky when he was UFC champion. He was living in Chicago, being the big man on campus. Then he loses a bunch of fights. And it's like, okay, I gotta change things up. Maybe I'll go where that George St. Pierre went, down to New Mexico, and train with those guys at Greg Jackson's. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a formula that's working for him now. I know a lot of people are talking about teammates, Alistair Overeem and Andrei Arlovsky. It doesn't really seem like they're teammates. It just seems like this is the facility, Jackson Winklejohn, and that Alistair Overeem would go there and train, and Andrei Arlovsky would go. Sometimes they would spar because it's okay, you switch, you do a round here, round with this guy, round with this guy. It doesn't seem like they're actually teammates.
I don't think they are. I don't know if Alistair Overeem has teammates.
Well, he has Alistair Overeem.
Yeah, Team Overeem.
Overeem.
Yeah. He's a pretty spectacular
guy. Whatever
anymore. He's doing is not wrong.
Yeah.
You can't tell him that's wrong. But, you know, he's lost and he's you lose and you question, am I screwing it up? Like with Weidman. He was like, well, I'm winning. I can't change too much because I'm winning. If your network is winning, if your business is winning, if your juice company is winning, it's easier to lose. It's rarer to win. So while you're winning, your job becomes don't screw it up. Well, you lost. So it's no longer don't screw it up. Now we can try new things. We can innovate.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the action that is going down in Rotterdam in Netherlands when Five Rounds Today continues. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. We are chatting about UFC Fight Night, which is coming up this Sunday night. Alistair Overeem, Andrei Arlovsky in the main event. And Alistair Overeem on a roll right now. Very, very patient. He has the experience. Andrei Arlovsky has the experience, too. I know there's a lot of people out there that say that Andrei Arlovsky and Overeem are chinny. If you are in a division where athletes weigh 250 pounds. Let's just say 225 pounds. 230. And they know how to punch you, and they land a punch to the face, there's a good chance you're falling to the ground.
Yeah. Okay, chinny. Let's just talk about that. Is that a real thing? Yes. But when do you know it's a real thing? Not after two knockouts. You don't. Because mathematically speaking, two knockouts will happen in your life if you get touched. If you get touched here, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You get touched here. You get touched here. You get touched here by a guy cleanly expressing the technique, generating power. You'll often get knocked out.
Yeah.
Now, when that happens, that thing that shuts off all of us happens. Mathematically speaking, there's a likely chance, just as likely as last time, that it could happen in your next fight or the one after. When we see that twice, it's a common thing, and it isn't a fighting thing. It's what we do as people in 2016. We react. We react because we've been trained to react. The media has taught us to react because the media has reacted. It's no good to report a story and say, something happened in the news. It's not that big a deal. It'll be normal tomorrow.
Right.
That's not going to sell you any papers in the old days, those olden times when they had papers, or get you clicks now or have people watch your thing. That's not going to do it. So you need, this happened. Holy shit, the world is going to die. Something terrible is happening. It's shaken the foundations of everything we know. We've been brought up on that since the 90s. So our natural reaction is, This happened, that guy needs to retire. This happened, his chin is gone. This happened, that guy can't keep up with anybody at the in the division. That's our reaction because that's what we've been taught.
But aren't we supposed to look at evidence and aren't we supposed to look at proof? Isn't that what we were taught in science class? Because if you look at Andrei Arlovsky's last 13 fights, you know how many times he's been knocked out? One time by Stipe Miocic. You know who he's been in there with? Frank Mir, Travis Brown, Bigfoot Silva, Brendan Schaub, Mike Kyle, Anthony Rumble Johnson, and Tim Sylvia. You know what those guys all did? Punched him in his face.
Nah, he's chinny.
He's chinny.
Yeah, but that's... We do... I know we digress sometimes, but you search for answers. If we search within the confines of what we have, we won't necessarily find the answers. This is a reaction... You said that you learn you should look at evidence when you're a kid. Yeah, they taught us that from grade 7 to grade 11. That's 4 years. The last, if you're 30, the last 12 years you've been trained by society to react, to look for broad statements, to look for huge events. Everything is something big. But it isn't. It isn't. Andrei Arlovsky is a heavyweight fighter. And did you say he got knocked out one time in 12 fights?
One time in 13 fights.
Well, that's shocking. He should have been knocked out more by all mathematical likelihood.
Again, the reason why.
How many 3- and 5-rounders are in there? A number of them.
Exactly.
So if we go and we get Reed Kuhn to give us his Fightnomics printout of those 13 fights, you know how many power punches he's probably taken?
Okay.
I'm going to say
hundreds.
1,300.
Yeah,
hundreds. Okay, now let's say 50 a fight. That would be 650.
There you go.
650 punches. Been knocked out one time.
But people look at that. They say that because when he fought Fedor, which he was, again, if you're objective, go back and watch that fight with Fedor. He was beating Fedor. He just made an error, did something out of character, and got laid out by one of the greatest heavyweights ever.
And we talked about out of character, pressure, stress, bad decisions, random, like Robbie said. Sometimes you don't even know why.
Exactly.
Also, that's a hell of a punch.
Exactly.
Flying through the air. By the guy with the best timing ever. Of the right hand in the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
That ain't chinny. That's like, that would kill a buffalo.
Yeah. So after Fedor, it was Brett Rogers. Now, again, I don't know how many people know Brett Rogers. If you watch Strikeforce.
Biggest man I've ever stood next to in my life.
Now, there are basketball players that have been taller than Brett Rogers. But the bulk and mass of this individual.
Probably close to 300 pounds before I started making weight.
If this guy lands a punch, I don't give a shit who it is. If he lands a clean punch on anybody, they are falling to the ground.
And it was Rogers' performance of his life.
Yeah.
And it was at least 3, maybe 4 clean, precise shots in the first 45 seconds.
Exactly.
It's all lit up. And just boom. Like, and that's it. Those two.
And then he went the distance with Bigfoot Silva, and that's where, because people were saying he didn't have a chin then, and Bigfoot Silva hit him, and I said, you people are wrong. Fedor, Brett Rogers, he has that fight with Bigfoot Silva, he loses, and then he gets knocked out by Sergey Kharitonov, who also fought in K1, and is now going to be a big prospect for Bellator, because Josh Thompson's out of his fight with Michael Chandler.
So he's fighting...
He's not fighting Kharitonov. Kharitonov comes in.
I got Chandler in that fight. Chandler's my guy. I got Chandler in that fight.
I think it's Kharitonov training Freddie Roach, too, in
what
preparation.
Crazy. So. Imagine, but... If you look back at that Brett Rogers fight, if you can point to me any living thing other than a rhinoceros that would not be unconscious after that, I mean, if anybody, like, look at that, the amount of power, this almost probably 285 by the time, fight time, first 30 seconds, like, but these are the things that we do, and when they happen, who did Pettis just fight? Barbosa. How many times has Barbosa been knocked out while we're on it? Like, look it up. I think it's 2.
Yeah.
It might be 3.
Right.
But we were at our guy at Metro. He was like, I don't know about Barbosa's chin. That is what you've been told.
Yeah.
And it's reported as if it's fact and repeated by people because, you know, in a lot of cases, the way that media or sports or whatever is reported is just gather up the stuff you've heard and present it.
Yeah, Barbosa's been knocked out one time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was former WEC champion.
It was Jamie Varner.
Jamie
Varner knocked him out.
And if you see the lean on that shot, and he's been dropped once. One time. But yet, when you look anywhere in the world right now, if you Google right now Barbosa and Chin,
yeah,
there, you will
he can't take a punch.
800,000 hits that says Chin is sus, and the word suspect will be used too, because if we're just going to repeat what we've heard, we might as well repeat it verbatim. He's been knocked out one time. One, you know, we're in television now, not just the web where you're watching us, so I'm not trying not to swear.
I think I said a bad word.
I said shit earlier. But one freaking time he's been knocked out.
Yeah.
One time. But he's chinny. That is a fact. That is, and I mean,
We're going to continue this discussion. We're going to take a quick time out when we come back. More Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you, chatting about a number of topics. Before the break, we were talking about fighters being chinny because Andrei Arlovsky getting ready to fight Alistair Overeem. And the tomato can media believe that Andrei Arlovsky can't take a punch in the face because he's been stopped a bunch of times.
I think
the reason why they do that is because they're using the boxing model. Wow, this guy went 30-0 and never been knocked out. And this, and even when you do lose, you don't, for the most part, don't get knocked out. That's not the way it works in MMA. MMA guys fight real guys in their second fight and their fourth fight and their fifth fight, their tenth fight. None of these tomato cans, 15, 30, 25, however many tomato cans. So when you're fighting good guys, there's a chance you're going to get knocked out.
In his last 13 fights, we figured Stipe. He took 650 significant strikes. Yeah.
He went three rounds with Anthony Rumble Johnson. Three rounds with Rumble Johnson.
Broken too, as I recall. And that didn't stop him. But these are the things, right? So, you know, when you want to look at fighting and you want to have your – I know that our audience is smarter than a lot of these sort of things that are presented as facts that are not facts. But again, this is not, oh man, there's something wrong with the way fighting is reported. This is the whole world.
Yeah.
This is how the time that we live in. And there is so much information available at all times. And your Google machine, the Googles, they give you what they think you want. And if you start to absorb information that is not real and that is not factual, I mean, global warming is a very common one people use in this conversation. 99.999% of scientists say that that's real and it's caused by humans. And there's like one in 12,000 scientists will say it's not. But if you are predisposed to that, Google will
You're going to find that guy.
And you'll be like, see? This is it. And it's like, you know, 12,000 scientists with no bias, no influence, no nothing. And one random guy, people would be like, who was the guy who did the Inconvenient Truth? Whatever.
Al Gore.
People are like, well, that's Al Gore trying to get people to think that. Why would he do that? But anyways, the point is, sometimes it's insidious, like cigarette companies intentionally trying to make sure that people don't think it causes cancer for years.
Yeah, for decades.
What was that movie?
Decades. The Merchant of Doubt.
Watch it on Netflix. I know we're digressing. We talk about fighting here. But sometimes it is insidious like that. And other times it's just laziness or just parroting.
Well, I think one of the reasons why is we have a real interest in this. We're trying to get to the bottom of things. We're trying to get a real understanding. And you and I have been to many of these MMA shows, whether it's the UFC or it's Substance Cage Combat. We see how the mainstream media, they'll go and they'll interview Joe Blow, coach, fighter, whatever the hot topic of the day is. The cameras will stop rolling and they will leave. Our cameras stop rolling. We continue to ask questions.
We're curious.
We are curious. Yeah. And we're curious and for our own, you know, selfish reasons. But it's also to be able to, you know, pass it along to the viewers to give them a better understanding and a better appreciation and allow them to enjoy the sport the way that we do.
I think that is a reflection, again, as much as those damn MMA media are tomato cans is what I do sometimes. It's not a MMA thing. It's that
yeah,
is,
I know.
You know, you show up at the thing And these five politicians have real concepts to affect America. And the guy with the crazy hair says some crazy stuff. That's what you put on TV. That's media. Yeah. And that's not, it's not good. Like, it's, we have a lot of things that are not true that we go through our lives are culturally and societally acting as if they're true. And that's not a good thing. But what can you do? If you work in this field, you try to search for truth. If you work in a different field, try to search for truth. Try to find truth. It's there. It's worth finding. It's worth finding. I mean, you can go through the world saying Andrei Arlovsky is chinny, or that global warming is fake, or that cigarettes do not cause cancer, or that, that you can build a wall and get the Mexicans to pay for it. You can do that if you choose to. Or you can look for truth. And sometimes truth is scary and it's more complicated. What you do discover, every time you find a nugget of truth, you get a whole bunch of new questions. But that's what it is to be human. That's what it is to be a curious person. And you know, us and many of our viewers, that curiosity is pointed towards fighting, because we find beauty in fighting. We learn other lessons about life in fighting. But the truth, man, it's so rare that when you pull it out, when a girl asks you a question on a date and you tell her the truth, she'll be like, wow, this guy's so different. You know, if you go into your boss's office and he asks you something, and he asks you in that shaped way that bosses ask employees, and you feel the need to give it back in that way that employees say to bosses, and instead you tell the truth, well, you might get fired.
Yeah, you're a shit disturber. Yeah,
but you also might create change. Yeah. You know, create change in what you're doing. You can do it. I mean, Arlovsky's not chinny.
Yeah, it's very true. He's not chinny. Another truth up after the break. We're going to talk about Stefan Struve, Antonio Bigfoot Silva, Gunnar Nelson, Albert Tumanov, and some of the other spectacular matchups that are going down in Holland this Sunday. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you, talking about UFC Fight Night that is happening this Sunday in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. The main event, Alistair Overeem and Andrei Arlovsky colliding in the co-featured bout. Antonio Bigfoot Silva taking on Stefan Struve, who has spent time training down the Black Zillions. We all believed that Stefan Struve was going to be this breakout star, this guy that is going to take over for the Fedors and the Crow Cops and the Minotauros of the world after Cain Velasquez and Verdum. All these guys would retire, because you look at Stefan Struve, only 28 years of age. His genetics, he comes from a land of fighting. He is in search of the truth of pure combat. I think we're going to get to see that performance against Antonio Bigfoot Silva, which is a little bit unfair, because Bigfoot Silva, these are the things he was allowed to do to achieve success. He's not allowed to do all those things anymore.
Many of which he needs.
He needs to be healthy.
Yeah, to be healthy. Like, he's got hormonal issues.
Yeah.
And it'll be, you hope he does well. But you got Struve there? You want to pull him up?
Yeah.
So we started off by saying being chinny is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
But you can't just assign it to somebody. Yeah. There's science to it, but there's also a little bit of, there becomes a point. Chuck did not believe that was the case. The second time, it's like, you know, mathematically speaking, if I play with fire long enough, I'm going to get knocked out twice in a row. But then you start getting touched later, and my brain. What it is, they say, is your brain is seeking to protect you from more damage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just shuts you off. And as a way to not take, it seems that's a theory. Again, that may not be true, so don't treat that as fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Much like, oh, well, if you gain more muscle, you get tired faster. That's not true. We can talk about that or not.
Stefan Struve, you said
how many times he been knocked out?
Six knockout losses, as I pointed out, 28 years of age. Now, does it matter that it's Alistair Overeem in 2014.
Yeah.
Alistair Overeem in 2014, different than Alistair Overeem in 2016.
That's for sure.
K1 champion Alistair Overeem, K1 champion Mark Hunt, the 6'7" Travis Brown.
Jesus, why did they let him fight all these guys when he was so young?
The hard-hitting Roy Nelson, the former UFC heavyweight champion Junior Dos Santos.
Wow. He has been smashed by the best.
Yeah.
Now, so let's look at this. The fact again, we cannot, well, see, Jenny's been knocked out six times. I guess, you know, he doesn't have much left in him. That's not true. We don't know that to be true. What we can do is dig a little deeper into what some of these truths are. That there is a certain amount of damage that you can take and a certain amount of damage that somebody exactly the same height and weight and age as you could take. And those are not the same things. They're different. But any amount of concussive damage causes some changes in the brain. So we don't know. We just do not know. You hope for him that he can go and have a ton of good fights by developing his skills different, using that range. He might never get touched on the chin clean again. Yeah. If that's the case, then we don't even need to know.
Right.
But six times being knocked out is something to definitely consider. But absolutely, positively, we cannot say, wow, Stefan Struve's been knocked out so many times, he's done.
He's done, yeah. That's
these
not
are
true.
Not things we can, these are not truths.
They may be truths.
They may be truths, but they are not truths. All you can do is acquire information. And once you start acquiring information on chronic traumatic encephalopathy, on how the brain functions, on concussive, subconcussive trauma, once you start acquiring all these things, you know what we find out a lot of the time? Nobody really knows. They don't know for sure. Hmm. They have information.
That's a scary thing, though.
Yeah, it is. But that's also a truth of science. A lot of science. A lot of searching for truth. You search deep enough that you get to the point that the truth is the best minds in the world know more than we know, but they don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And things that the nature of science is we get the most information that we have so far.
So far.
Then as we acquire new information, we come to new truths.
Which could prove exactly. You come to new truths. It's like, oh, the stuff that we thought was real wasn't actually real, but it led us
to the truth.
Yeah.
So the search for truth goes through many areas, and some of them is try a truth and disprove it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get to that point, if I'm in half guard and I'm doing this, that'll get you to open. Oh, it didn't work. I got armbarred.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the new truth.
Yeah, that's what Damian Mayas told me. He said, you know, in jiu-jitsu, he said he looks at jiu-jitsu as an ever-evolving art, punches 100%. And kicking. And he goes, there are theories that we have in jiu-jitsu. And he goes, but they all have to be tested.
Yeah.
They have to be tested and you have to prove that they work in the real battlefield. Doing you and I going to the gym and trying some things. It's like, oh, I just created a new technique. Yeah. But you get into a live scenario where somebody's really trying it and it doesn't work. It's like, well, that technique doesn't really work. Mm-hmm.
There are entire this is what I love about fighting. And this is probably where half this conversation has come to is that desire to keep searching. That's why fighting – that's why we watch it. That's why we try to – give people more insight into it. What we're hoping that you find is that there are no set forever rules. If I throw a right hand and you do this, this happens. That's bullshit. That's not true. It's true right now until we find a new answer.
Yeah.
And it's going to change forever. And the point is not to learn, well, you know, inside fighting, you do this, and if that happens, this will be the answer. The point to learn is that there's always another answer. There's always another answer. And there are no experts in fighting at all. And if you take this concept far enough, there are no experts in anything. There are only great students who have gotten far enough to acquire a lot of information and figure out how to use that information to be even better students, because nothing is determined forever. And fighting is more than almost anything is a microcosm of that. There are things you can do to me in jiu-jitsu that will work for 25 years, and then some guy come along and shuts
everything
all
down.
All of it down. It has now become
irrelevant.
Yep. When I move my hip this way, all of it is gone. That's incredible. We're not searching for, well, And it's the same thing with breaking fights down. We don't want to just go, well, anything with the left hand is this, and anything with the right hand is this, and this means that. What we want to do is go, what have they figured out now? What's at play in this thing, and where does it go in 3 months, and in 6 months, and in 9 months? And you get moments of learning things where you feel like you're really smart. And then you should remember that you're really dumb, and all you have is acquired some amount of knowledge, which is supposed to open doors for you to acquire a whole bunch more.
It's kind of like the whole predictions thing. Every time we do a preview show, our preview shows are shot on Thursdays, we're asked for the predictions. So for this main card, it was Overeem and Stefan Struve and Gunnar Nelson and Durandamy and Krylov and Kovalkovitz. So the main card. And I think the reason why, because if I'm not mistaken, you picked Overeem, Stefan Struve, Gunnar Nelson, Durandamy, and Krylov. You picked all those, right?
Yeah, mostly because those are the people I like.
Oh, sure. And, you know, like. But the reality is, We don't know. We don't know what they've gone through in their camp. No. We don't know how good – what type of rest they have. We don't know what type of nagging injury they have. Yeah. So based on the facts of, I've seen their skill set –
how much better they got.
Exactly. Those are all realities that it's like, okay, you're asking me to pick based on a minute number of details. So this is what you're going to get.
This is what you get. I try to when I'm around on it. It's we're more and more busy with
hammered.
More and more cool stuff that we get to do all the time. But I try to respond to almost everyone who tweets me to as much as I can. And the one that I just don't now because I don't know how to respond anymore is, let's say Weidman Rockhold. Who you got?
I don't know.
I mean, it's 2 months away.
Yeah.
I've looked at the last fight. Under these circumstances, these things are likely. But also, Rockhold apparently injured his knee. Is that a fact?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Was he
lying?
Yeah. Did he just put that brace on?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many variables, unlimited amount. If you're saying guess, and then at the end of it, we'll either go, you were right, or you were wrong.
No, you're right, or you're wrong, you're an idiot.
That's
what it comes down to.
We could do that, but I think – and we do it because there are certain things in television that are done, will be done, and will continue to be done.
Doesn't have to
be. Well,
we've broken the rules for a decade here.
Yeah, true. But if you go somewhere, if TSN says we need you guys to do a thing, they sent Fight Network in. If the UFC says sit at the desk for Ottawa, they're going to ask us because that's part of television. Mm-hmm. What's your prediction? Who are you picking? I mean, you just have to play with the mechanism. The truth is, the more you learn, the more you realize predictions are illogical. Now, if you're asking me if we could somehow run this fight 100 times in 100 parallel universes, how many I'd pick? Who I'd pick 70
right.
of? I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But I mean, tomorrow night, and I'd be wrong maybe.
Chase giving us the sign. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're discussing more about the show going down in Holland and looking ahead to everything that's going down in the world of the UFC. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we were talking about predictions and how we believe it's ridiculous because we don't always have all the details. We're not there in Karolina Kowalkiewicz's training camp to see her getting ready for this fight.
We have called a bunch of her fights.
We've called a bunch of her fights.
We have.
That's exactly what my point was going to be, is that because we've seen some of her fights, we know what to expect from this girl. Where, you know, you look at the audience, because you say there's no merit in predictions. There's some people that are watching right now. It's like, what are you talking about? I get like 80% of my picks right. Every time I pick, I know who's going to win because of this and this and this. How do you argue that?
Yeah, you don't. You don't. I mean, Cody does a thing on Tapology, which is a cool website that's a lot of data. And I think he said at one point he was like in the high 60s or even in the low 70s, right? So like, let's say 67% or even say 71%. That's really good.
But Cody consumes everything. Yeah, he's watched a lot of these fighters grow.
But it still means 29% of the time
you're wrong.
29, that's 3 out of 10.
Yeah,
you know, that's a lot. So we can, if you're going to go, ah, damn it, I was wrong sometimes, and go, ah, awesome, I was right, you'll get to do it more than you were wrong. And there's a certain way. So when you start to realize that predictions are folly is when you take all the information or as much as you can get and keep adding more. And you go, cool, I know about how their skills match up. Wait, I understand about growth. Who learned more? How do fighters improve? Well, I learned how Duke trains his fighters, and I understand that in 4 months you can actually raise the – okay, I learned that. It's getting more confusing. Oh, now I know that – I heard he was injured. Is that true?
He moved his family. Right, yeah.
Now they say that he gained 10 pounds. More confusing, more confusing. Because the more data you get, the more information at play, the more our curiosity gets piqued more and more. And our job to go and find those stories or create conversations about them starts working. But the function of trying to make a logical prediction gets worse the more information you acquire. So Cody and others are many people on the internet that are good at picking fights. Gamblers who make money.
Yeah.
And people just, you know, best – there's fight pick websites and stuff. And some of them are like 7 out of 10, yeah, which wow. is very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. But what they do – and this is a fascinating different thing – is they actually do what's called thin slicing. So they discard most of that information. And they concentrate on a few thin slices of information. And for Cody, over the years, it has become, you fought this guy, yeah, but he lost to this guy. And that piece of information, although flawed, is right enough
right.
to make him right in his picks. So you actually can become a better predictor by having less information and only the important information.
I don't pick fights.
And the important information is that which will make you right more often than wrong. So for the purpose of being a good fight predictor is very different than being a good fight analyst or learning about fighting, because a good fight predictor discards a lot of that information, doesn't want to know about it, because for their purpose, which is just predicting fights, it is –
It will hinder their ability to make money.
Exactly.
Everything comes down to commerce. Right? That's what it always
but
comes down to.
And that is really fascinating. Less information at times. So let's take that into fighting. Some fighters are aware of all of the threats. And you've seen guys freeze up and get knocked out cold.
Yep.
Too much. They're overloaded. Other guys are like, when that guy does this, I'm drilling him. They simplify it. They thin slice the information they need to have. And that whatever that thin slice is something they build with their coach. It might be just when I see his hips move. And some like Eddie Alvarez, if his hips are lower than yours during the wrestling, yeah, he's winning the wrestling exchanges.
Yeah.
Thin slice. Doesn't need every piece of information. He has a thin slice.
However, one of the fighters on the card, Gunnar Nelson, who's going to be taking on Albert Tumanov in Holland this Sunday night, outstanding matchup. He didn't have all the information he needed in his fight with Damian Maia.
Mm. Yeah, he thought he did.
He thought he did.
And that's tough. And he was wrong. Yeah, and there's different arguments. Which one do you want? Which one will benefit you the most? And that is the one that your coach will help you find, probably. I'm a worse jiu-jitsu player than him. Okay, well, if that's true, what's our answer? We got to train more jiu-jitsu. I already train a lot of jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Damn, okay, that's – okay. Or we need improvements everywhere, but it was in my execution.
Or let's not make it about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in – was it – then it was it a game plan issue? Because if it was a game plan issue, we can work on that. Was it a ability to perform issue? And Gunnar believes it was. His coaches believe it was. And McGregor that night when we mm-hmm. asked him mm-hmm. about it, he believed it was. He was like, if you could just see how this guy flows in the gym, he wasn't doing that.
Right.
So their belief was – it was about his ability to perform in the moment. Now, that's a hard one because, well, how do we increase that? How do we increase that? That's what they work on. So they chose to or discovered that being able to perform in the moment is where we could raise. And if we could increase that quotient, we will fight better.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're looking to head to the show in Brazil, arguably the greatest card in UFC history. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today, our final segment as we are looking ahead to UFC 198. Before the break, I said arguably the biggest card in UFC history. Well, I think if you're a Brazilian, this may be the card for you. You have arguably, when I say arguably, Fabricio Werdum, he defeated Cain Velasquez, mm-hmm. choked out Cain Velasquez yeah. in his last fight, defeated Fedor Emelianenko, defeated Minotauro, defeated Alistair Overeem, some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. You could see, knocked out Mark Hunt. You could see how people would make a case for Fabricio Werdum being the greatest heavyweight of all time because of his accomplishments in mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu. Jacare, one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in MMA, taking on Vitor Belfort. Anderson Silva on the card.
Damian Maia.
Damian Maia versus Matt Brown. Just mind-blowing how Shogun,
on Fight Pass.
Little Nog on the card, Chris Cyborg on the card. Just
Anderson Silva.
Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall on the card. Amazing. Just a ridiculous matchup involving some of the biggest Brazilian stars of all time. Jose Aldo's not on the card.
Yeah.
But
other than and Barão, who's had hot burning moments in his career. But we said earlier in the show, how could Rockhold have been like, oh, washed up Brazilians? How and why can you do that? These are some of the best fighters in the world. And Chael, of course, went after them like crazy.
Of course.
But that's a different thing. Disrespectful, and people felt disrespected. But Chael is an entertainer, willing to take those risks to disrespect to entertain others. That's a different conversation.
And, you look at this card, it's filled with legends. But also, you look at John Lineker versus Rob Font. John Lineker, maybe one of these guys that is the future of Brazilian mixed martial arts.
Is that on the main card?
No. Who knows? All these cards are good. Yancy Medeiros, Francisco Trinaldo, Nate Marquardt versus Thiago Santos, Worley Alvarez.
Awesome. Every
fight on this card is ridiculous. Alves versus Brian Barberina. That's, just a remarkable night of mixed martial arts. What card are you? What fight are you looking for? I know we talked about this. Damian Maia and Matt Brown, spectacular. But is there anything else that you're hoping to see from this? Are you hoping that Stipe becomes the guy?
I am, but I do like Verdum. I broke them down. It's coming out sometime this week, maybe today or tomorrow. And I became an even bigger fan of Verdum watching it. But Stipe's special, too. And I would like to see him do it. I don't know if you can do that in a stadium in Brazil. That's a whole other assignment. But I am excited about that heavyweight fight. Overeem told us he thinks he's going to win this weekend, beat the champion in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and you can understand from a selling standpoint, that would make a lot of sense.
Overeem?
And now, is he looking at it as from Fabrizio Verdum being the champion?
He said 60-40 was his pick, Verdum. 60-40.
Wow.
He believes Stipe can do it.
Wow.
He does believe Stipe can
do it. And he believes that it's going to be Fabrizio Verdum because 60-40, which would be the third match between Alistair Overeem and Fabrizio Verdum. Verdum beat him in Pride.
Yeah.
Overeem beat him in Strikeforce.
Yeah.
And then you have a great story
that
here.
Would be
amazing. And yes, I know you're not necessarily a big fan of all the storylines and the drama, but
it matters to me. The UFC. They sell.
Yeah.
I want people to watch the fights.
Yeah.
How they end up there,
that's
all good. That's all good. You end up there where you're like, oh my God, these monsters. 1-1, it's the heavyweight champion of the world. I mean, that should sell itself.
Of course, we were talking about UFC 200, the show 199 with Luke Rockhold and Weidman, but Chase is saying we're out of time. Next week, we promise you we'll get to Ottawa, we'll get to 199, and everything that's going down in International Fight Week in July. On behalf of Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in to Five Rounds today. See you next week.